The Man in Line, brought to you by netzeromatrix.com, your one-stop shop for advice on renewable energy solutions and other green initiatives.
Pastor Mike, good afternoon. Welcome to Man and Light on Manx Radio, your chance to have your say. Your ideas, response, reaction, whatever it is you want to talk about, then call 66 13 68. You can text on 166 177. Email studio at manxradio.com and WhatsApp 166 177 as well. It's still continuing the story about what is happening at the Newson site in Douglas, and still lots of reaction about what the government's going to do about dilapidated properties, brownfield sites, whether or not it's the government's job to get involved in that. And really, what can we do about it? What exactly can we, the public, do? Or do we just have to, you know, kind of accept that that's what's going to happen? So if you want to get involved, by all means, text 166 177, but email, you can call as well. But I've got a note in from a representative of Kell Properties. Now, Kell Properties is the company that applied for the planning at Newson's property, and Kell Properties have dropped me a note in to say, on Friday's Man in Line, two contributors phoned in regarding the old Newson's building. Now, they both incorrectly claimed that Kell Properties already had a planning application accepted to refurbish the building. So, it might be helpful for your audience, says the says Kell Properties, to know that the application from 2018 was not made by Kell Properties. Rather, it was made by another unconnected company who were interested in buying the property at the time. They decided not to go ahead with a purchase, let alone the redevelopment, as they found it was too expensive for them to achieve the reuse of the building as they'd hoped. Unfortunately, the state of the building means that it is unlikely to be viable for redevelopment in a safe and secure way. Now, that's correspondence from Kell Properties just regarding the old Newson's building, that the planning application from 2018 was not made by Kell Properties, another unconnected company who were interested in buying the property at the time and who decided not to go ahead with it. Well, the story continues, and the story about our brownfield sites just goes on and on and on. This is all tied up with the fact that the government wants us to thrust forward into 2023 and beyond, head for another 15,000 people on the Isle of Man, and economic prosperity. It's what everybody wants. It's like saying we all want world peace. Everybody does. Just depends how you get there. So how do we get to economic prosperity and well-being? And if you can solve that, you'll be a millionaire. The planning, the decision to replace two retiring head teachers on the Isle of Man's primary school with leaders already running other schools isn't a cost-cutting exercise, so says the Education Minister, Julie Edge, after her department confirmed that Max Kelly will be the head teacher at Williston Primary School from January, and Adrian Shorthouse takes over at school in the Jubilee. Now, Max Kelly also runs Doon and Laxey, so he's going to be in charge of three schools, while Adrian Shorthouse is in charge at Cuweg, and now, of course, from January will be in charge at school in the Jubilee. So will it dilute their kind of role? Well, we'll see. And if you've got any thoughts about that, then please get in touch. So, that note from the tax office, by the way, of course, you've got until Friday to get your personal tax details in. If you're trying to submit returns and attachments online, There's a big problem with it at the moment. Online, the Treasury tell us they're aware that there are currently issues with submitting returns and attachments if you're trying to submit your income. It's not you, it's them. Don't worry about it. The matter is being urgently investigated. I bet it is. And you are to accept their apologies for any inconvenience caused and probably know they won't take it as an excuse if you file late. So, have you got your tax return in on time? Let's get back to the subject of dilapidated properties. There are many dilapidated properties right around the Isle of Man, plenty in Ramsey, plenty there are dilapidated properties in Port Erin, in Castletown. And Chris Thomas, who is the minister in charge of this, the infrastructure minister, Chris Thomas says that grants should be available. This public money should be available for people to bring dilapidated properties back onto the property market. Now, the infrastructure ministers revealed more details of what's called the Empty Properties Initiative, which is designed to tackle vacant and derelict homes around the Isle of Man. And maybe you live next to one. Maybe there's one on your street that somebody's had for years and years and years, and it looks like a mausoleum. It's hollowed out, it's unpainted, it's falling, the roof is going in. If you have one of those on your... First of all, it's going to affect the price of your property and the area. So what do you do about it? Well, Chris Thomas says the government has a range of options. And listen to some of the numbers that Chris Thomas quotes.
Directors at Majestic Apartments say that while the buildings look...
And if you can hear exactly what he's up to, just to say... you know, what's going to happen with this? Have a listen.
It's a shame. In fact, it's even neglectful to have so many empty properties, whether they're dilapidated or used as holiday accommodation, or they're just unfit for habitation, lying around. We've got to do something about that. So,
and sadly, it's almost to people's economic advantage in some cases just to leave the properties empty at the moment. So how is government going to actually move these properties?
We don't need to invent the wheel. There's lots of options that are there. Some of them have been thought about in the past in the Isle of Man but haven't been implemented. Around us in Wales, in Scotland, parts of England, they are implementing things. So it's to do with looking at the rating system, looking at the tax system, looking at providing grants appropriately to help people bring things back into use. So I think we understand the situation now with the 5,800 census night vacant properties and the 200 or so dilapidated properties and the 2,000 or so that nobody's paying any electricity bill on. I think we understand the situation now. Now we need to come up with policy responses and try it and see if we can do something about it.
Well, did you get those numbers from Chris Thomas? He scooted through them, but I noted them down. On census night, there were 5,800 vacant properties. 5,800 vacant. There are 200 dilapidated properties on the Isle of Man and 2,000 properties where no electricity is being paid. Now, some of that 2,000, some of that 5,800 may indeed be the 2,000 where no electricity bill is being paid. Now, it's understandable, it's incontrovertible that we have a housing problem on the Isle of Man, and it's always been said that, you know, with supply and demand, if you release the supply, then you satisfy the demand. Well, it would seem that there are lots of properties on the Isle of Man that are vacant, unoccupied, dilapidated, and no electricity bill being paid. So do you think there is, as Chris Thomas said, a policy decision to be made by government to do something about it, to release properties onto the market so people who want to get a property can get a property at the right price? Is it time for government to do something about this situation? What do you think about it? Let's get to the lines now. Betty, what do you want to talk about, Betty?
Hi. I want to talk about the head teacher thing whereby they have said that there'll be one head teacher over five schools. And I could be completely wrong, but whoever said it wasn't about money.
It was Julie Edge, the minister, said it wasn't about money. So we're talking about two head teachers. One's going to be in charge of three schools and another one's going to be in charge of two schools.
Right. Well, I just feel if the deputies are really in charge. If they're doing all the work, surely they should be paid as heads, and the other ones who are head teachers should be called overall heads. So I don't see how a head teacher could be really up to date with everything that's going on in the schools if she's over three, you know.
It would seem, we got a note in last week where somebody said this happens in the UK. So obviously we're copying what's happened in the UK, which may or may not be a good idea. And they say that they call them executive heads, look after more than one school. And as you say, they then leave the poor old deputy head teacher to actually run the place.
Doing the work, so she should be called head and she should get the money. I'm just saying this. I don't know anybody's head teacher, you know, it's nothing to do with me, and I'm even too old to have children at school or anything, but just listening to it, it seems to me it must be about the money, and the poor old deputies are missing out on the extra pay. That's all I feel. I could be quite wrong, but that's what I feel.
Well, Betty, everything's about money in the end, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
All right. Thanks for calling, Betty.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. It's 18 minutes after 12 on Manx Radio. You'll be delighted to know. This will fill your heart with joy. The online services have now been restored, so you can file your tax return. Treasury wants to apologise for any inconvenience there may have been caused by you delaying the fact that you need to promise Treasury money. So you can file your tax return online. I don't think builders, Ed this is, thank you Ed on 555, I don't think builders like working on older buildings because it's easier to work on new ones. A number of times I've been let down by people saying they'll do the job and you never see them again. Says Ed. Is that human nature? Is it more trouble to work on an old building than knock it down and build something brand new? Why doesn't the government do them up, rent them out and say to the owner, when we recover our money back, we'll give you the property back? Surely that's simple. Text 379. And we got a note in from, this is... Manny is... Oh, Marilyn. Hi, Marilyn, who just said, well, it's simple then. If we've got all these properties that are vacant on the Isle of Man and we've got lots of young people who want houses, surely the government can actually step in. If a property has been vacant for more than 10 years, why doesn't the government step in and compulsorily purchase it? Because if that property owner has no intention of doing anything with it, in the national interest, Marilyn, the government should just step in, compulsorily purchase, give them the market value, and sell it to somebody. Vacant property recording on census night is a snapshot for that night only. People may be on holiday, away on business, staying with friends, says this correspondent on 070, and could have ticked the unoccupied box, says Ed in Castletown. Absolutely understood, Ed, but surely not everybody, not 5,800 people will have been on holiday. But we take the point, and remember, this time last year, well, just a little time over this time last year, during the campaign for the general election, housing came up all the time. You couldn't stop candidates talking about housing and getting housing for young people. And bear in mind what Paul Crane, the man who wrote the Manx Population Atlas, was talking about yesterday, losing migrating young people from the Isle of Man, because often in the UK or elsewhere it is cheaper to buy a property. So surely that could be something to look at, but we'll wait to see. Brownfield sites. Texter 869. Andy, brownfield sites, dilapidated properties, should have to pay full rates, because then if they aren't paid, they can go through the coroner's court and force them to sell, and hopefully an independent builder can buy it at whatever value the owners let it get down to, and the builder would have the experience to do it up and then sell on. Surely, if we've got thousands of properties that aren't being used, and we have perhaps hundreds of young people who want to buy a property, this is the way forward. And you don't have to actually build any brand new properties. You don't have to build vast estates. The properties are sitting there, dilapidated and waiting to go. Robbie says, take note, 773, Douglas Corporation have 5 empty properties in Marathon Drive. So if a public authority has 5 empty properties, how many more of their properties are empty around Douglas? Robbie, that's a question we could ask the council. Are they? They're not a city yet, are they? Well, we'll find out. But if there are, and if you know of any public sector properties that have been empty for any amount of time, then tell us. We'd like to see. Maybe take a photo, and send them to us. But it would seem, wouldn't it, if we have this many thousands of properties that are empty, and we have young people who actually want properties, what do we do? Julian's with us now. Hi, Julian.
Hi, Andy. Slightly different topic, but it was in connection with yesterday when we were talking about identification of people and things. When I was listening, it occurred to me that part of the problem might be that these days it seems like we've got a lack of what you might call objective truth, and it's being swapped out with subjective truth. So in other words, somebody says they identify as a cat, which objectively they're not. However, they've been giving some credence towards this from a subjective point of view. And as Dewan correctly pointed out yesterday, there's at least one generation that haven't had to, what you'd say, cut their cloth. And they might be naive and vulnerable to manipulation from various sources. But it occurs to me also that they're also voters, which can also influence our political environment. So you've got a kind of a feedback loop here. And it kind of distracts from other things that's going on. And what I am sort of thinking about at the moment is, and it sort of ties in with what I'm going to get to. At the moment, I think we saw in the press that the new Isle of Man sentencing bill is being drafted, which will probably may well mirror the UK's new Police Crime Sentencing and Courts Act, which went into effect in April this year. Which effectively updated what we're using now, which is the Public Order Act. And this new act effectively gives the police a lot more power to intervene and control things like protests. Now, at the time, before that act came into the UK, former Chief Constable of Greater Manchester Police and the Durham Constabulary said that the new law, and I quote what they said, threatened civil liberties and constituted a politically motivated move towards paramilitary policing. And David Blunkett, the former Labour Home Secretary, described this act as an anti-protest bill threatening to make Britain look like Russia. Now, the new sentencing bill that's been worked on at the moment will probably have a similar effect to the previous one because it removes obstacles to pave the way for the new bolt on to it, which will be the hate speech laws, which are highly subjective. Very hard to say who's going to decide what these hate speech laws are. And that's where the use of this subjective truth as against what we're used to, our objective truth, which was our anchor in reality, really, the objective one. And it just makes you wonder if this will allow the goalposts in law to be moved at a whim. Because, you know, something we might say or we might want to protest today could be deemed illegal in the future if this legislation gets put in place.
Yeah, I wonder, Julian, I mean, we've been kind of inculcated with government being involved in our lives for absolutely years now. And there was a time, it was the early part of the 20th century, when government didn't really get involved in people's lives. It wasn't until things like income tax arrived and what have you. And as you say, the government making rules up and notions of civil liberties, I mean, as you say, you know, perception is reality. People believe what they want to believe. And I just wonder how far we go down this route before people start to, and again, I don't want to be pejorative in this, before people wise up and see what's happening.
Well, I mean, for example, let's say the one we've talked about recently with the sudden swimming pools problems. So objectively, from my point of view, the primary problem was they had about 10 times less funding over the previous 8 years than the other pools did, which is going to give you a problem, isn't it? I mean, you know, if you've only getting 19,000 instead of 250,000 per pool in the other ones, you've got a problem. But we're being given what looks like a subjective answer. Oh, we don't know what's wrong, so we need to commission an expensive pool review. So you see where I'm coming from. There's this kind of, there's the objective anchored in reality. They didn't have enough money to keep going. But then you've got this subjective thing about, well, we don't really know, so we need to get somebody else in to do a review of it.
That could be called passing the buck.
Well, yeah. But it can also be that if you want to say, I don't know, if you want to move things around the way you want them to, it allows you to be kind of able to manipulate the goalposts so you get where you want to be.
Hmm. Well, there's
a
kind
of two ways.
Yeah, I mean, there's a meshing of. Once upon a time, there was politics, and there was the media, and there was the PR and advertising industry, and they were all quite separate. There's been a meshing. There's been a kind of blurring of the borders between PR and media and politics nowadays, and sometimes you're hard pressed to tell the difference between the three.
Yeah, I mean, objectively. We can now see the results say that, unfortunately, the schools on the island didn't do too well in the league tables across. But the lead story is we're talking about children that might want to identify as an animal. So there's another subjective one. What's more important? The important thing is to make sure that the kids are actually doing well in school and not sort of being distracted or ensconced in things that aren't really going to help them in their future.
Interesting. All right, Julian, thanks for pointing that out. Good to hear from you.
Thanks very much, Andy. Cheers.
All right, good to... let's go to... I think we got Aaron with us. Hi, Aaron.
Hello, how are we?
Fine, thanks. What's on your mind, Aaron?
I just wanted to speak about the nuisance development because I noticed it on the quayside, so I've done a bit of reading up on it because I'm a local apprentice builder myself.
Yeah.
And what I've seen is it's not made it past planning, but if it's that important to the government / heritage, why don't they buy it off the original owners themselves?
And what do you think they should do with it, Aaron?
Well, me personally, looking at the development, I think it's a very good development to have, especially on the quayside with the modernisation that's going along with, you've got a couple bars along there, such as the British, JC's. They're all fantastic establishments, but just having that big eyesore there, I think if they added the commercial units to the ground floor and have bars, it would be great for people my age, just because I'm in my 20s myself, and it's just a shame to see the island being run by the older generation who just want to see steels up on the side of the building, because that's all it's going to be able to be for the next 50 years now.
So when they say to you, and people have said, you know, this is the last of its kind of a warehouse on North Quay in Douglas, and it's part of the past, I mean, how much does that register with you? What's your reaction?
That registers with me quite a lot, because my dad's very, very clued up on all this, and he loves the heritage of the Isle of Man. And same with myself, I love going around museums and all the rest of it. But for me, looking at the actual development itself, it looks like they're trying to keep quite a lot of heritage whilst bring it into the modern world. And I think that's what the island needs. We can't just keep going back and focusing on our past when we can bring it into the future, but keep our past history with us. I think that's the best way forward.
Okay. All right. Thanks for calling, Aaron. Appreciate that.
No worries at all. Bye-bye.
Cheers now. And Peter's with us now. Hello, Peter.
Oh, hello, it's Peter Murcott here. Totally different subject. Defender of the faith. Very relevant because we've got a new monarch on the throne. What's ever so interesting is that this title that the monarch has doesn't appear on Manx coinage, and I can't find out why. I've made inquiries in the past, and I noticed they don't even put the DG, Dei Gratia, by the grace of God, on current coinage either, for reasons that maybe somebody else knows, but I've not been able to find out. But what I was going to say was that there's been quite a lot of discussion nationally about the title that King Charles III will have. And what hasn't been commented on is the fact that it's based on an Act of Parliament that goes back to 1543. and it defines what the FD, Fidei Defensor, means in English, which is the defender of the faith. And that, of course, couldn't be changed unless you had another Act of Parliament to change it, since it's laid down by statute, and the statute, as far as that goes, still stands. So I just thought that was probably interesting for those people who take an interest in coinage and also take an interest in the events that have happened just recently and the discussion that's taken place, that the title is of very ancient origin, but for some mysterious reason, it's not included in the Isle of Man.
I've never noticed that, and you obviously look at coins a lot closer than I do, so FD is not on Manx coins.
No, no, and we've on the they don't even have DG, Dei Gratia, by the grace of God, which, again, is a title that was acknowledged back in the 1543 statute, so that has actually statutory recognition. No, it isn't on, and we've just actually checked on some recent coinage. Now, they'd probably say that they don't have enough room, but one of the problems is that, unlike the English coinage, they actually use the word queen, whereas English coinage doesn't. It just says Elizabeth, like with the late queen, it just said Elizabeth II. So obviously, if you put another word on in that very small confined space, you're not going to have room for anything else. But the English coinage would say DG, Elizabeth II, and probably say FD after it, which they would have room to do. We know that the Isle of Man has, of course, the words Isle of Man on it, but there would be room if they actually didn't put the word king or queen on.
Before he was king, when he was heir apparent, Prince Charles, as he was then, said he saw his future role as defender of faith, not the faith. I just wonder what, I mean, do you have any comment on that?
Yes. I've already said it. That couldn't be done unless they have an Amendment Act to the 1543 statute that goes back to Henry VIII's time. It is still in force. It's called an Act to ratify the King's style. And the historical reason why it was passed was because Henry VIII actually received that title from Pope Leo X, actually 500 years ago, last year, in October 1521. When he broke with Rome, the next pope, Paul III, in about 1537 or so, took the title off him. But what happened in 1543, Parliament passed a very cleverly worded act. And what it did was unusual for those days, because in those days, when they passed an Act of Parliament, they had what we call a preamble. And the preamble would recite the reason why it was being passed, and also would recite something of the history that had preceded it. But this act doesn't. It's completely silent about the course of events that had taken place. And it doesn't specifically talk about Defender of the Faith. It actually is an act that actually recites all of Henry VIII's titles. And the Fidei Defensor is just sort of sandwiched in the middle. And in a sense, what it's doing, if it's looked at carefully, because it's a ratification act, one that confirms something, it ignores the fact the title was taken off. And it actually raises, I suppose, a fiction, really, but it gives the impression that Henry VIII always had that title. And it just totally ignores the fact that someone from over the seas had taken it off him. And I'm sure it would have pleased Henry, because I would suppose that it annoyed him when the title was removed from him by Pope Paul III. And so Parliament obliged by putting a fiction that, Your Majesty, that doesn't really matter. You always had that title back from 1509 when you became king. That's the inference that the Act has, but it's still in force. And if the current king wanted to change his title, which I think he said subsequently now that he doesn't, but if he did, he would have to go to Parliament and ask Parliament to pass a new statute.
Okay. There we are. All right. Thanks, Peter.
Thank you.
Good to hear from you. And a note in from Francis, who said, I heard what you said about King Charles III, or as he was, the Prince of Wales then, the heir apparent. He did say he wanted to be defender of faith, not the faith, but he clarified it later, saying, whilst being the defender of the faith, you can also be the protector of faiths, says our now Lord of Mam. John in Laxey said, Andy, can we have some clarification on what points the Newsom's development was refused? It's my understanding that the MLC, Marlene Hendy, wants it to stay as a working warehouse. Surely that's impossible to do. It would be a huge cost to store stuff there. No developer would finance this. So why don't the people see reason? This is totally a non-starter for one to undertake, or maybe the government wants to develop it that. I wonder what's going to happen. Thank you, John, for that message in. We're still talking about this Newsom's development. There are other developments, by the way. There are other brownfield sites. This is just a very high-profile one on North Quay. Surely getting the government to buy old properties is wrong, as the money is the Manx public's money, and we Manx taxpayers pay for the government. These properties, the owners need to be slapped with perhaps huge fines and made to bring them back up to some sort of standard, says Fred. The houses on Marathon Drive are being dropped, apparently, as they're riddled with damp and in very bad condition, says Fiona. Can somebody ask Julie Edge to explain the reason for allocating several schools to one head if it's not cost-cutting? Can she also justify that all the deputy heads at these schools will now have a lot of extra duties and responsibilities that they're not being paid for? How long will she find that when a deputy head position comes up, no one wants to apply because they just end up as a part-time head?
Me and the missus have been using Spectrum windows for as long as I can remember. From the windows in our very first house to our new orangery, we've received the latest tried and tested products and a great service. Locally based Spectrum work island-wide and employ their own installers, so the excellent workmanship's guaranteed. Come to think of it, we've been married as long as we've been using Spectrum windows. That's 25 glorious years.
Visit Spectrum Windows, the showroom, Derby Road, Ramsey, or call 81777.
If your business buys professional indemnity or directors and officers liability insurance, you'll be well aware that premiums are rising and cover is being reduced. Aon can talk you through the different exclusions to help you get the best deal. We're one of the largest international insurance specialists and we're here to help. Call 692 400. Isle of Man Limited is registered with the Isle of Man Financial Services Authority as an insurance intermediary in respect of general business.
Concerned, confused or curious about climate change? Want to do your part? Then visit netzeromatrix.com, helping businesses and individuals understand the net zero targets that government has set, how they'll be achieved and what impact it will have upon us. Plus, get practical advice and tips for saving energy, the options available for switching to renewable energy technologies, and much more. We all need to do what we can. So visit netzeromatrix.com and join us.
Get your motor running, head out on the highway, because there's a £200 voucher to win from H&H Motorcycles this weekend. Zed may be dead, but if you can guess the film from the pictures of the motorcycles on the Manx Radio Facebook page, you could be riding off with £200 to spend at the island's dedicated motorcycle service, repair and restoration centre on South Quay Industrial Estate. Check out H&H Motorcycles online and Facebook. It's no silver dream. It's your chance to win a £200 voucher with H&H Motorcycles and your nation station, Manx Radio.
The Man in Line, brought to you by netzeromatrix.com, the world's leading carbon register and validation ecosystem.
Faster Mind, 19 minutes before one. David's with us now. Hi, David.
Hi, Randy. Other sites are available, and I'll just quickly run through the ones which are in custody for the taxpayer, which is us. is a Summerland site. What's happening there? Nothing. Nothing coming along. The prison, the old prison there. Nothing. Although when I was in government, there was a set of development plans there for that. And the Park Road site for housing, there were some units were to be built at the old prison site there, which were potentially for disabled people, which were bungalows, level access showers, wider doors and stuff like that. And of course, the other ones are outside there too. And I feel for some of the builders there now. Why would they want to get involved? They might as well just keep their money and wait till the English government puts the rate up.
I just wonder, you know, you talk about Park Road. There have been rumours for must be 10 and more years that the Bowling Green pub was going to close because that forms a big part of that site. It's a big footprint there. So I don't know whether the Bowling Green's going to close. You wouldn't have thought they would do anything with that site until they knew what was happening with the pub.
Well, that's the issue. Actually, the taxpayer owns that pub. And the QB, which I believe now is, well, virtually derelict. I think it's still owned by the brewery. I don't know whether it's open or not. When you go past, I don't think it was even open bits and pieces for TT Week. But they're owned by the taxpayer of the Isle of Man. So it brings me back to this development corporation that government set up. We must have an opportunity to get them on. What their expertise is, and what are they doing about the situation on the other side of the coin, which we own as taxpayers and ratepayers and stuff like that. What are the government doing with those buildings we can do something with? And they're virtually, in my opinion, especially the Park Road site, had planning permission, definitely for some first-time buyers, which will be greatly needed in the centre of Douglas.
Well, I can tell you, we've invited the people from the Manx Development Corporation. The managing director is Dane Harrop. Also people like David Peach, Sean Gilbert, is the chair of the board there as well. Dane Harrop's been invited on to Man in Line. And as soon as if they want to come on just to talk about what the Manx Development Corporation's plans are, and obviously they're cracking on with the old nurse's home, it will be nice to know what is going to happen, because these things just blend into the background. We get used to them. They're the elephant in the room. But when people come to the Isle of Man, they look at Summerland and say, what is that?
Yeah. And they say about the promenade too, regarding when you look at the promenade walkway. I think Mr. Thomas said something like in the next election, they're going to do something about it. Well, we want something done before then. We've got about another 4 years to put up with that. And it's just abysmal when you look at the... You walk down there, the sunken gardens. They used to be a credit to the corporation. I don't think they're any more, but maybe I'm looking at it with different glasses on there.
Are there any derelict properties around Onchan, David?
There are... I would say there's a couple of properties which would be for unfit for human habitation, and I'll put it down. I'm not talking as a member of a local authority now, but I know I am aware of a couple anyway on that. But the difficulty is, and Mr. Thomas could do something about this, how could he assist local authorities to get people to court? This is the biggest thing. You take people to court, and it's quite an expensive trip to take somebody to court, because you've got to prove that it's for some time that the building's been derelict, misused. You've got to see it from the highway. One of the conditions are now. And as far as I know, I think the only one that's been recently was one in Douglas. I won't name the individual or the company that exists there. But he has one in Onchan too, which is appalling. Talk about letting the side down in the avenue in Onchan there. But I mean, Mr. Thomas comes out with all these blistering things about we're going to do this, we're going to that, we're going to have a housing policy that's going to be great. Why doesn't he get hold of some of the local authorities to say, well, you've got land in your area. We've had an eastern plan for a long time. And what's stopping developers going past, pushing forward with the eastern plan is that they had to have some justification that homes were wanted. Well, if we're going to have another 1,000 people or potentially more than that coming into the island, they're not going to want places with respect to all the properties that a stone built or in or registered. There's no money for them. If you're going to buy something or you're going to give your kids some money for the future to establish in the Isle of Man, what would you do? You want to give them a home that's brand new built, is in a on a local authority, sorry, on an estate which has got a great network with buses and interlinks. That's what people want nowadays. They've gone past the days where they've got the Thaltons, I'll say it as that, the old mud hut and the toilet. I remember Paul Rose, where the outside privy and a hole in the door and a string there to put the newspaper on.
All right.
Come on.
We appreciate that. Thanks for calling.
Hey, boy.
Good to hear from you. Thank you. There's a tailback in Victoria Street in Douglas. Apparently a DOI wagon has broken down. Thanks to our WhatsApper on 927 for that. So a tailback in Victoria Street. If you're stuck in traffic, apparently that's what it is. Elizabeth joins us now. Hello, Elizabeth.
Hello, Andy. What I want to know and have wanted to know for quite a long time, why do these kids have, or teenagers will be polite about them, why do they have to have a brand new house and new furniture and so forth? Why? What's wrong with what we had? We did not. We lived with our parents in our parents' house. I, for instance, lived in with my parents or with my mother. My father died when I was only. I was only 4 years old when my father died. So I lived in North Harrow with my mother and my grandparents and my two brothers. I joined the Air Force, went into the Air Force, came out after, 5 years, went back into my parents' home, and then, I was in my parents' home until I married.
I think, Elizabeth, it's down to expectations. I think people nowadays have greater expectations.
Well, there was nothing wrong with my life, nothing whatsoever.
I mean, how much furniture did you have when you moved into your first house?
We had three rooms, three bedrooms, and a toilet and a bathroom, separate toilet and bathroom.
I mean, was it fully furnished? Did you have fitted carpets and everything?
Yes, it was.
Oh, we did.
Yes, it was. Why can't they live in the same sort of houses, as we did?
Okay, all right, Elizabeth. Thank you for calling. Thank you for that point on Man in Line today.
Drive smarter. Drive more reliable. Drive a great deal at Man in Motors. With a superb range of cars for every budget, always available. And if we don't have it, we'll source it. Plus, servicing, valeting, and prestige detailing too. Man in Motors. Richmond Hill, Douglas. Find us on Facebook or call 420-420. That's 420-420. Drive a better bargain at Man in Motors.
Need something to brighten up the autumn months? Treat yourselves to a glitzy night at the Manin Hotel. Enjoy a glass of Prosecco on arrival, three-course a la carte dinner, superb entertainment, plus a night stay and breakfast too, all just £185 per couple. Join us on Friday, October the 28th for a fabulous Adele tribute show from Helen Ward Jackson. Visit maninhotel.im to book or call 60 25 55 now.
Business Talks is the new podcast series from PwC Isle of Man, bringing you the latest perspectives and knowledge on topics and challenges facing business and society. Episode 1 is out now, talking about all things ESG and how your business can take action.
It's not just a box-ticking exercise. It really does pull through into adding value to businesses. And we see that, you know, you can see companies will find it easier to find new customers.
Business Talks from PwC Isle of Man. Available now from manxradio.com and all podcast platforms. Visit pwc.com/im for more information.
The Man in Line, brought to you by netzeromatrix.com, helping Isle of Man companies and citizens to understand net zero targets and a green future.
9 minutes to one on Man in Line. Don's on now. Hi, Don.
Hello there. I'm just quite worried about these properties that are empty. I think it's absolutely ridiculous. And to offer them, I would compulsorily purchase them.
You think that's a good use of public money? What would happen then if the government's got all these properties?
We're not going to give them value, of today's value. We're going to give them a peppercorn. This is nonsense. These people are a burden to society. Just buy the property, give them 500 quid, and that's a lot.
Oh, well, that would focus the mind, wouldn't it?
Oh, absolutely. You know, if they don't want the property, they want to leave them empty, good luck to them. But let the government have them, and even put them off to auction and sell them, cash received, go to the general public.
All right. OK, thanks for that, Don.
The other point is, these brownfield sites, I mean, why don't they just sell them? Sell them, and the people, the planners, want to kick up the bottom. The people that buy them, give them a limited time to build on them. Otherwise, they lose the property.
All right. Thanks for calling today.
Okay, mate. Cheers. Bye.
7 minutes before one on Manx Radio. I just want to put this before you. And it's about this decision to replace the two retiring head teachers at Isle of Man Primary Schools. Sian Cowper spoke to Julie Edge and asked if having two teachers in charge of five schools dilutes their leadership.
Certainly not. It's not new. We already have this practice in two of our schools. Annika and Manor Park have a head of more than one school, and the same at Rumsey and Sulby. And obviously each individual school will retain their own deputy head teachers and teachers in charge. You know, I personally feel that it's going to enable a head teacher to take strategic responsibility and remain accountable as the person for a number of schools.
So why haven't the deputy heads within the schools that have needed new head teachers been promoted? Is there a skills shortage there?
No, certainly all of our posts are advertised. Our head teachers' posts were advertised. And when we advertise them, we do state that we would accept a head teacher of more than one school. And obviously Max and Aid put themselves forward on this occasion and they've been successful. And of course Max has already been doing this shared collaborative approach with Laxey and Doon.
You mentioned there Max Kelly's role in Laxey and Doon. Of course Willesden, slightly geographically further away. I think I'm right in saying it's possibly a slightly bigger register at Willesden as well. Realistically, how much time is he going to be able to commit to each of those schools?
Well, you know, the head teachers are going to spare some time over the next few months to make sure they're aware of their schools before taking up the positions on the 1st of January. They're both really very well qualified and experienced, and I would say inspirational, innovative head teachers. And, you know, I am confident that they will ensure that all of the schools under their headships will thrive.
Is this a cost-cutting measure?
No, certainly not. The budget is retained by the school. And it's then down to the head teacher to make sure that any of the money, you know, it's put back into the school budget, and that will help the head teacher of the more than one school to decide how to use that and the best way to use it for their school.
Have you consulted with the teaching unions about this? Are they in support?
So as I've said, we've already got two head teachers doing this. It's not new. It is something that happens elsewhere. And we don't need to consult with the unions on everything, but we do tend to consult with the unions on ways forward. And, you know, the head teachers, Mr. Kelly and Mr. Shorthouse, obviously have put themselves forward. I don't know if they're in unions, but I suspect they will be. And I think it's a good way forward for progressive, inspirational and strategic teaching on our schools and a way forward for our schools. And they're both experienced head teachers that understand the complexities of the role that they're taking on, and I give them my best wishes.
So now you know it's not about saving money. Paul said, Andy, the head teacher situation is about empire building. Basically, the head deputy head is going to be running the schools and the head teacher will just oversee them. Empire building. I think this should be outlawed in public services. This is going to increase as the years go on. So, Max Kelly, new head teacher at Williston Primary School, already runs Doon and Laxey. Adrian Shorthouse, already in charge at QEG, takes over at school in the Jubilee. One head teacher, three schools, 100% cost-cutting, says Bill, putting more pressure on the deputy head and staff. Sainsbury's did this years ago with stores, same terminology used. Well, Julie Edge says the money's going to be retained in the school. Thanks to Chris Quirk producing today. Back tomorrow. WINT.